You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
This is All in Our Family, and I'm S. Yolanda Robertson, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Listening audience, do I have a treat for you? You know what? I just met the most extraordinary, I'm telling you, the most extraordinary real estate agent, and his name is Cy Marmaduke. You know, when I first met him, I let him sell my cousin's house. You know, I gave him my cousin's house, and it sold so quick it make your head swim. But I was just amazed at the love and the professionalism that he put into his work. And I just said, I just got to get them on the show. And so, Cy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Yolanda. How are you doing?
Now, did I tell, is your name Cy Marmaduke or Marmaduke Cy?
It's Marmaduke C, actually.
Marmaduke.
It's spelled out S-Y, but since we were colonized by the French, so you have to say C.
C.
Yes.
Oh, okay. C, not Cy. And I'm doing it like it was the American name. But Marmaduke, You know, you're in real estate. What made you get involved in real estate?
Well, you know, Yolanda, growing up, I always had a dream. Mm-hmm. Actually, I should call it a vision, you know, of owning my own business and also helping the community, you know. And what's a better take than going into real estate? And right after graduating from college, I have a family member. By the way, my name is also Mamadou Ndiaye, a brother-in-law of mine. You know, a great guy. You know, he's an investor, and he was managing many different apartments and housing. So from there, you know, he hired me right after college. And I started working in the accounting department. Uh-huh. And from there, I said, why won't I just go ahead and take my real estate exam? I mean, I wanted to get my license. Because Like I said, you know, I always wanted to own my own business and be my own boss. Uh-huh. And that's what actually, you know, got me into real estate, being my own boss and helping build a vibrant community. And that's what I'm about.
How long did you have to take? You said you took classes. How long did that take?
Well, the classes, it took me a little bit longer because I was working full-time because the classes are just self-paced. Uh-huh. So you take the classes, you know, that you like. You can start out, let's say you have to take four different classes. You have to take the real estate finance class, law. You have to also take appraisal and the basic of the real estate business.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So from there, you know, I started out, you know, taking classes as I go and working full time. So it took me about 5 months. It took me a little bit longer than expected, but I ended up finishing up. And yes,
wow.
So I went through Hondros College, actually.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So Hondros College, and then now you're a real estate agent.
Yes.
You know, what's been some of the most successful parts of being a real estate? What do you enjoy the most about being an agent, and what's the most challenging part?
Helping people. I mean, it just puts a smile on my face when I see families at the closing table. I mean, just seeing them signing those documents, even though sometimes it's a lot, especially when it comes to financing documents, you have to sign a whole bunch of paperwork.
Yeah, yeah.
But after everything is said and done, just seeing that smile and making families happy, I mean, that just, you know, puts my heart at ease.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's the most challenging part about being an agent? What do you think is the most challenging part?
The most talenting part?
No, what is the most difficult part about it?
I would say going through underwriting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people think that just going out, you know, doing house hunting is hard. I tell them, hey, listen, this is the easy part. Going through underwriting is definitely, it's very stressful. Because here they go asking you some sets of documents. You provide those documents, and then it goes through underwriting again. They ask for the same exact documents again, and usually clients get frustrated. I mean, real frustrated. And my job, you know, is to put them at ease. Hey, listen, these people, they're giving you over $100,000, $200,000.
Uh-huh.
So they have to scrutinize you. Uh-huh. They have to know who they're giving their money to. So just be patient, and then we're going to walk through it.
Uh-huh.
And always I get the same response. Well, you know, why are they asking me for the same documents over and over again? I say, hey, that's part of the process. But at the end, you know, it all works out. So,
you know, that's what I loved about working with you because, you know, sometimes I had questions when I was selling my cousin's house, and mm-hmm. I said, and I didn't know what I needed, you know, some of the things that I needed to do. And I said, well, I'm gonna ask Mama do this question. And before I could ask it, you were setting my stress at ease, because you already knew. It seemed like you already knew what I was gonna ask. You said, well, just get this together, do this, and it's be okay. Yes. But you know, when you try to sell a house, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're, and certainly your help, so I want you to share this information with the listening audience. Mm-hmm. But what when you're trying to sell a house, let's walk through the house, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to walk through going in front of the house, okay? Mm-hmm. What sells in front of the house? What is the curb appeal?
Yes, the curb appeal. I mean, you mm-hmm. said you nailed it. The first thing that a person sees is the curb appeal,
uh-huh.
the
uh-huh.
yard,
uh-huh.
and you're looking at maybe, especially when it comes to the summertime, it's good to have flowers.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Flower power.
Yes, fresh mold, uh-huh. the grass is cut, you know, uh-huh. nice and neat, you uh-huh. know, all the edges are trimmed.
Uh-huh.
And right now, what's becoming also popular is, you know, the veneer siding,
uh-huh.
and it's uh-huh. it's very cost
siding.
Effective. Yes.
Uh-huh.
People,
uh-huh.
yeah, you can... It adds like a tone, you know, uh-huh. it just adds that tone, you know, uh-huh. and it's not that expensive to uh-huh. actually, uh-huh. you know, put a veneer siding.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, uh-huh. so that's very important. The curb uh-huh. appeal is number one.
Uh-huh.
It's actually the key. Uh-huh. And also people now, they go into installing steel doors and putting all these, you know, different technologies like cameras and uh-huh. security systems.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's also pretty appealing. Uh-huh. And also uh-huh. changing the garage door. If you happen to have a garage, uh-huh. definitely, you know, get a good garage door.
Yes. That's okay.
Yes,
so you were saying, so when you have the cameras and mm-hmm. all that with your house, that does that add value to your house?
I mean, it just adds a more a sense of security.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, people uh-huh. like to feel secure, especially uh-huh. nowadays. I mean, we're living in crazy
uh-huh.
times.
Uh-huh.
People
uh-huh.
definitely like to feel secure. Uh-huh. So, yes, just a sense of security, that's uh-huh. all.
That's mm-hmm. when they see the cameras. Okay,
right.
So we're going mm-hmm. into, and what colors? I mean, if I was going to look at my house,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to paint my house or put some siding on my house,
mm-hmm.
what colors sell more than anything else?
Right now, one of the most popular colors is actually gray.
Gray?
Oh, shades of gray.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Wow. It's
pretty popular. Exterior uh-huh. and interior as well.
Oh, so pretty gray is a popular. The trimmed and white?
Yes, you can.
Uh-huh.
You can.
Uh-huh.
People also like, you know, neutral colors.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Like,
it gives a sense that the space is actually bigger than
uh-huh.
what it actually
uh-huh.
is.
Uh-huh.
And it gives you also that fresh
uh-huh.
look, yes,
uh-huh.
which is very important when it comes to selling your
uh-huh.
home.
Well, you're right, because every time I see a gray house, I just go, wow, mm-hmm. la,
yes.
la, la, la.
Right.
and particularly if it's trimmed in white, I just think it's so pretty.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
Yes.
I guess you're right. That
mm-hmm.
gray does, you
yes.
know, it does mm-hmm. have an appeal to it.
It does.
Okay.
Certainly does.
All right. Now, if
mm-hmm.
I go into my house
mm-hmm.
and I want to, you know, try to get ready to sell, or I want to try to increase the investments up in the house, which room should I remodel first?
Believe it or not, there's two rooms.
Two
I
rooms?
Wouldn't say two rooms, but
uh-huh.
two essential rooms.
Uh-huh.
The kitchen.
The kitchen.
And the bathrooms.
And the bathroom.
You'd be surprised.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people love to see a modern kitchen.
Uh-huh.
You know, with new appliances or uh-huh. up-to-date appliances.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Cabinetry.
Uh-huh.
And flooring also is very important.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So once you get your kitchen, you know, fixed up properly, it
uh-huh.
it's definitely a selling point.
Okay.
Also the bathrooms. People like to see new, updated bathrooms, modern bathrooms.
Modern bathrooms.
Looking at, you know, ceramic tiles and
uh-huh,
yeah,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
new shower doors, sliding shower doors, or maybe
uh-huh.
a jacuzzi, nice bathtub.
Uh-huh.
And then people like also spacious bathrooms.
Because
uh-huh, uh-huh. if you go back in the days, they used to build the bathrooms a little bit smaller. But
uh-huh.
now people like to have a bigger
bathroom.
But they wanted the bathroom to feel like an actual room.
Yeah.
So, yes, kitchens and bathrooms are very important.
Kitchens and bathrooms.
Yes.
So that would be, and the same colors, the grays, are they the most popular colors when you're trying to sell?
I mean, when it comes to kitchens and bathrooms, I mean, like I said, you can mm-hmm. put, you know, ceramic tiles, for example, in the bathrooms.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't really matter, you know, what color you put in, as long as everything is in perfect harmony.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to have gray here and then, you know, have some stainless steel, maybe doorknobs and, you want everything to pretty much flow.
The colors and stuff to flow.
Yeah, fresh colors, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything to match.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And what other kinds of things should you, I mean, if you're trying to sell your house, what other kinds of things should you be doing, you know, to get your house in order? Yeah, you talked about the kitchen, we talked about the front, and the bathrooms. Are there anything else that needs to that you need to prepare for if you're trying to sell your house?
Unclutter. I mean, clean up.
Clean up.
Clean up and organize.
That's probably the most difficult one.
Yes, it
you
is.
You got to get rid of the clutter.
You have to. You have to. I mean, nobody likes to walk into a home and look at all the... And sometimes, you know, it takes a side of an investor to actually go into a house and see the potential. Not to demean, you know, first-time home buyers. But most people don't have that eye.
Yeah.
So for a first-time home buyer, they like to walk into a house and just... Mm-hmm. Feel the freshness.
Yes.
That's why, you know, I was just saying it's good, you know, to paint the house a neutral color. Because when you walk in, everything is cleaned and fresh, and then you have a neutral color, so it gives like a sense of home, like a homely sense. Yeah. And it's very important. So clean up, tidy up, you know, organize it very well, and have some air fresheners, make it smell good. And it definitely helps.
Is there any certain odors that you need to have? I mean, if you got the air freshener that sells more than another one?
No, not really. Just something fresh. Yeah, just people like lavender, I guess.
Lavender?
People do like lavender and just, you know, fresh lemon scents also. So. Yeah, those are pretty popular. And you may even have some candles. There's some good candles, especially, you know, Bath and Body. I like Bath and Body personally. You know, my wife knows that. I mean, I just love it. So, I mean, I love candles. Even though back home, you know, we have incense. We have the tradition of burning incense. But I just love candles.
Yeah. And there's something about when you go into a home and it has that fresh odor and it has that odor, it just sets you into a different kind of mindset, you know, particularly with that lavender. That lavender scent is so wonderful when you walk into the walk into a home that you have
indeed.
That. Wow. Now, you know, like for people that are wanting to purchase a home, what should they do? I mean, what kind of tips would you give them before they contact you? What should they have prepared themselves for before they contact a real estate agent?
I mean, the first thing first, I will say, you can contact a real estate person first, but also check your credit. It's very important, you know, to check your credit. Call a lender, if you're doing financing especially. Call a lender. You know, they can definitely walk you through. I mean, they are the expert, you know, when it comes to lending money and then knowing about credit. Fix your credit. Because you can, even though, you know, you can get qualified for a 580 with a 580 credit score through
580?
FHA. Yes, through FHA. Yes. But most lenders have an overlay. They prefer to see 640. Especially for the first time home buyers. Some of them actually need down payment assistance. So if you want to qualify for the down payment assistance program, you need to at least have a 640 credit score. So yes, try to get that credit score taken care of first. And the second thing I would say, start saving for money.
Should you have the approval for the amount that you can purchase a home from the lender before you contact the agent, or should you contact the agent first and then get the approval?
Get the approval. Either way you do it, if you contact the agent first, the agent is definitely going to take you right back to the lender. Because before you go out there, you know, looking at homes, it's better to know what you can afford, how much of a home you can buy. Because you don't want to be going out there looking at, you know, we all have an expensive taste. Go out there looking at a $400,000 home, and then you can only buy a $200,000 home. So it creates a problem. So definitely go and talk to a lender or to your local bank. Go to your local bank or credit union.
You know,
talk to them and then get that pre-approval. It's very important.
And try to fix your credit too.
Yes, if you have bad credit or no credit at all, try to fix your credit. And I know of some lenders that can actually help you, you know, build your credit up.
Now, is it when people are trying to buy a house or they're renting, now they may be paying like $1,500 because mm-hmm. that's what some people are paying, to $1,900 a
yes.
month
yes.
for renting. Mm-hmm. What is the advantage of buying, purchasing your home versus renting a home?
When it comes to buying a house, mm-hmm. I mean, this part of the American dream, Yolanda.
Uh-huh.
It is yeah. it's just what it is, and it's a strong foundation
yeah.
for families and yeah. also the community at large.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say that, especially nowadays, we're living in uncertain times.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off owning a home than renting.
Yeah.
Because you have all these different when it comes to let's say, for example, if anything happens with your job and you mm-hmm. cannot pay mm-hmm. your rent, I mean, you have how many months? Maybe 1 month. 2 months, and then you're out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you own your house, you know, you can go through different programs. Mm-hmm. You can maybe do a loan modification. Mm-hmm. You know, you can worst case scenario, you know, you can go into a short sale. Mm-hmm. But before you get to that, the bank will definitely work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I will strongly suggest to everybody, especially, you know, in the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go ahead and buy a house, own a piece of property. It's very important. That's part of the family black. That's a foundation. Yes.
Yeah,
it's,
yes.
Yeah. You have to build a strong foundation. And what's the better way to build a stronger community than owning real estate?
And Mama Do, I have talked to some people that have been in their house. They didn't even know, mm-hmm. You know, that the owner wanted to sell it. And they may only give them maybe a month or two's notice and say, you know, I'm going to sell this house.
Mm-hmm.
And they're renting.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you own a house, nobody but you got the freedom. You
right.
want to be there.
Yes, and you can, and you also build equity.
Yeah,
right now, you know, with the fixed rate, right now interest rates are very low.
Right now
it's around like 3.5
oh, you know,
depending
wow.
on your credit score
yeah,
so you look
yeah.
at yeah it's pretty low 3.5
uh-huh.
versus let's say a few years ago, not too long ago it was around almost 4.5 to 5%
uh-huh.
but going back 30 years ago people was getting interest rate like 12% 16%
yeah. oh yeah
so 3.5 is very very yeah. low and yeah. you can afford to buy a yeah. bigger home a
yeah.
better home
yeah
yes
yeah mm-hmm. yeah so and you can take some of that off your taxes too.
That is correct.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
The interest that you pay.
The interest that you pay.
It's tax deductible.
To me, it's more like a win-win situation.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, some people they like renting because I would say there's less responsibility.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to, for example, pay for any maintenance when you're renting. You just yeah. call the landlord, be like, hey, the garbage disposal is not working,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
or the dishwasher, whatever,
yeah.
and they will come and fix it.
Yeah.
Now, when you own a home,
yeah.
all those responsibilities
yeah.
are on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
here's also the good news for first-time home buyers.
Uh-huh.
You can get a home warranty, Yolanda.
Yeah, yeah.
You can get, for less than $800, you can yeah. get a 1 year home warranty, and if anything breaks in the house,
yeah.
they come and fix it.
Yeah.
Some of the home warranties, you don't even have to pay any deductibles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you have major expenses, especially
yeah.
when it comes to the AC units,
uh-huh.
you know, or any plumbing issues,
uh-huh.
they will
uh-huh.
come and take care of it.
And they have home warranties even if you're not a first home buyer.
That's right.
You know, that you can purchase a home warranty, and
yes.
and then you know, they have reputable people that come
right.
and can repair your appliances
mm-hmm.
and also, you know, whatever things that you need, the air conditioner.
Yes.
You know, all those things that you need,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep the maintenance of your house together.
Right.
Mama Do, how mm-hmm. much money should you really, I mean, if you're going to save, how much should you have? I mean, what's a good bargaining amount to have saved if you want to purchase a home?
To be on the safe side, I will say 5%.
5%
yes.
of what you're going to offer.
Right, 5% of the purchase price.
Uh-huh,
so,
uh-huh.
yeah, definitely, you know, save up. Save as much as you can. And also, if you happen to work for a company,
mm-hmm.
you can save more money through your 401k. I always tell my family members and
uh-huh.
close friends, hey,
uh-huh.
listen, if you was putting 5% or 10% on your 401k, try to increase it.
Uh-huh.
Because here's the thing. When it comes time for you to buy a home, even if you don't have a big savings,
mm-hmm.
you can dip into your 401k.
And use
yeah.
that for...
And you can use that money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because purchasing a home is considered, you know, as part of a retirement plan.
Yeah.
Because you get to build that equity.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
there. So yes,
yeah.
you can take your 401k money and put it right into your down payment. But I would say save at least 5% of whatever purchase price you have in mind. Try to save 5% of that. But when it comes to FHA, you know, you have to put down 3.5%. Yes, that's the lowest. So yeah.
But you talked about building up equity. How much equity do you normally build, you know, in your home? I mean, it's about how much you save or what? I mean, how much you owe on the house? How is equity established and building it up in your home?
Equity is established by reducing, you know, the principal. Let's say if you purchase a $200,000 home and then you put 5%. So right there you owe around what, 190? So when you pay down on the principal and then when your home value increases, the spread, that's what is called equity. So that's pretty much how you build it, by paying down the principal. And over the years, you know, you start building more equity into your home.
And your home values increase by doing some of the things that we talked about before, right?
That is correct.
You know, and also, now can you put too much money into your home? I mean, you know, you're the only person in your in the neighborhood that has a swimming pool, and you know,
right? Yes, yes,
you
can
put too much.
Yes, you can.
How do you know if you're putting too much into your home? I mean,
let's say for example, some of the investment that you put into your home won't give you the same exact return. Or let's say if you put in an investment of $10,000, you want to recoup maybe at least $9,000. Now, you don't. If you have an expensive taste and you go into and put maybe high-end appliances and then put maybe two decks and, like you said earlier, a swimming pool, you know, those are personal. That's something personal. So it's not going to increase your, it's definitely going to increase your home value by from the side of the people, but in reality, you're not gonna get most of that money back. So just if you want to resell, don't put too much money into it. Just be conservative.
Oh, okay. Wow. My goodness. So if someone is interested in purchasing a house, they can contact you, right?
Yes, they
and
sure
if they
can.
What about if they want to be a real estate agent? Can they contact you too?
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, we're always looking to add, you know, more people into our team. So they can definitely contact me at 614-815-7338. Or they can go to LencoSalesHome.com. That's our website.
Okay.
Yes.
LencoSalesHome.com.
Yes.
So they can contact you if they want to be. Now, do you spend a lot of time? I mean, how many hours a day do you spend selling houses? How much time does that take?
I mean, sometimes I like to go house hunting with certain clients. Try to work with their work around their work schedule. So let's say if they have like the weekend off, I would like to go maybe 3-4 hours just doing house hunting, going to different housing and then showing them, you know, the listings. Yes, so that's what it takes about like 3-4 hours, I would say, on average.
3-4 hours a day?
3-4 hours a day, yes.
Oh, okay, that's not bad.
Yeah. Not counting the preparation, of course.
So that's not bad then. And do you have to have a degree to be a? Do you have to have a college degree or a high school diploma to be a real estate agent, or is there any education requirement?
Yes. You need to have a high school diploma to be a salesperson. Yes, that's the minimum. So now, if you want to go into becoming a broker, you need to have a bachelor's degree at least. 4 years college degree if you want to become a broker. But for just a salesperson starting out, yes, you just need a high school diploma.
Now, so what does a broker do?
The broker is pretty much in charge of the company. If you have a listing, it's factually, you know, the broker's listing. So yeah, they pretty much like the manager. They manage the agents, they manage the company, they make sure that everybody's in compliance, you know, with the laws and code of ethics and canon of ethics of the Board of Realtors. Yes.
So do you have to go to school every year to keep your license, or do you, if there's so many years you have to go back, or do you just get your license and you're an agent?
actually you have to take continuing education.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so for the first 3 years, for the first year, you need 10 hours of continuing education. For the first 3 years, you need at least 30 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, the requirement is minimum of 30 hours of continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going back and reviewing, you know, the core of the real estate uh-huh. business, like real estate mm-hmm. law,
uh-huh.
ethics, uh-huh. and, yeah, uh-huh. affordable okay. housing. So okay. all those is very important. Financing. Yes, it's good. You always have to keep up to date with what's actually going on in your market. Because
uh-huh.
if you want to be an expert in the market, you have to know what's going on and what are the latest news, the new laws, you know, that was established.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know who that is that's calling. Let's see. They keep calling up when I'm on the line, and turn this off, but that's they know that I'm taping everybody, so it must not be an important call. But you said that you have to go, you do have to go to school and take a minimum of 10 hours a year
for the first year. Yeah, uh-huh. once you get your license, the first year you need 10 uh-huh. hours of continuing uh-huh. education.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Now, 3 years, your license gets renewed every 3 years.
Uh-huh.
So, in the first 3 years, you know, before your birthday,
uh-huh.
you need to take at least 30 hours of continuing education.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In order to keep your license.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow. That sounds wonderful. So how yes. long have you been doing this?
It's been 4 years.
4 years?
4 years,
wow.
yes. 4 years.
Oh, wow.
But I started out, maybe I started working with my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And it took me almost a year
uh-huh.
you know, to get my license.
Uh-huh.
So I was in the accounting department. I was handling the collection of the rent and all of that, yeah.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Running after renters.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So. And now you're putting people in homes.
That's right.
I got good. I'm telling you, now you're getting people, having people get their dream.
The,
you know,
yes,
that's probably
yes,
even
yes.
more rewarding.
It's
like
more rewarding.
Oh.
Increasing. Yes, it's more rewarding.
Oh,
I mean, it,
wow.
it just makes me happy.
Yeah.
And people call me, hey, you know what? Thank you, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know,
yeah.
if it wasn't for you, I could. Because people run out of patience. Like I said, when you go through the underwriting process,
uh-huh.
it can be really, really, really stressful.
Yeah.
Really stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, so just being able to hold it together,
yeah.
that makes a huge difference. At the end, you know, they get to appreciate everything that they went through.
Yeah. Yes. That is so wonderful, wonderful.
Yes.
Is there any other things that you want the listening audience to know about buying a house or selling their house, Mama Do? Did we cover everything, or is there anything else that we want them to, they need to know?
I mean, for home buyers or even first-time home buyers,
uh-huh.
yes, do your homework.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you need to work on your credit, start work, have a plan. Even if it's going to take you, let's say, 6 months for first-time home buyers to work on your credit and save up enough money to buy a house, please start that. And realtors and lenders, they can definitely help you put a plan together.
Uh-huh.
And in 6 months, put you into your first home uh-huh. or maybe your dream home.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yes, when it comes to sellers, you
uh-huh.
know, do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Prepare, ask questions. You know,
uh-huh.
what do I need to do
uh-huh.
you know, to make my house more uh-huh. sellable?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So, yes. Ask
okay.
those questions. Those are very important questions.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then they can sell it. What they mm-hmm. need to know, you know, they can ask you before they sell it.
That is correct.
And so that they can have everything together, you
mm-hmm.
know. So,
right.
so okay.
Yeah, like for example, like the updates, you know, we were talking about
uh-huh.
earlier.
Uh-huh.
Some people don't know what they need to upgrade.
Yeah.
As if they need to upgrade the kitchen or maybe the bathrooms.
Yeah.
So, yeah, consult a realtor. Definitely feel free to call me.
Yeah.
And, I can definitely come and give you free consultation and let you know what you need to upgrade and what needs to be done, what plans can we put forth. So when it comes time to sell your home, well, it's not going to give you any – you're not going to have any problem selling it.
Because
sometimes some homes, you know, can be difficult to sell.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, some, but you know what? Some of it seems like even the ones that are not sellable are selling right now too. But you could
yes.
probably get more money
right.
for the property if you're able to fix up those things and get prepared for it.
Yes, get
yes.
prepared for it. I mean, Columbus is a hot market.
Uh huh.
And to everybody's surprise, people thought, especially when it comes to this COVID-19. that's going around. People thought that homes would not be selling. But homes are actually selling. Because you know why? This is the best time for home buyers and also for sellers. Because here's the thing. When it comes to home buyers, interest rates are very, very low. You're looking at 3.5%. Now, many people can afford to buy their dream home. Now, when it comes to sellers, the market, the inventory is very low. And house pricing actually, they rose up so fast in the past few years. Houses that used to sell for $100,000 last year now are selling for
$140,000.
Yes. $200,000 mark, you're looking at only like $250,000. So, you can sell your house. Yes.
Oh, wow. 50,
there's like a big jump. You're looking at maybe like a 9% increase or more.
Oh, my God.
Yes, home values definitely increased. So, this is the best time, you know, for those home sellers, you know, to get, you know, the equity.
This is
the best time for them to sell and then make money. It's the best time for home sellers and also home buyers.
Also, so this is the time.
Yeah, this is the time. Yes,
it is. Oh my gosh! So people need to contact you, or if they're even thinking about buying a house, if they're thinking about buying a house, they need to contact you. And give us your number again.
Yes. It's 614-815-7338.
At 614-815-7338. You can contact Mama Doo.
That is correct. Or you can also go to our website, which is LencoSellsHome.com.
But look, don't forget to call Lenco Realtors at, what's that number again?
614-815-7338, or go to LencoSellsHome.com.
And tell them that we sent you over there. I'll see you next week. Love you.
Now we back from paying the bills, baby. Maybe we'll fire the landlord. This next song is dedicated to all the cool cats and...
Attention, Central Ohio.
Stand by for an important message.
Someone once said, these times like all times are good times if we just know what to do. Lenco Realty says this is the best time to buy or sell a home, because interest rates are the lowest in history. Lenco Realty has been providing real estate services for over 40 years in Central Ohio. Let us help you fire your landlord. If you have questions on pre-approvals, credit scores, down payments, financing, down payment assistance programs, schools, or other real estate questions, go to LencoRealty.com or call us at 614-375-2289. Again, 614-375-2BUY. Fire your landlord. Call us at 614-375-2289. Check out LencoRealty.com, then start packing.
For the best home fragrance and beauty products, shop Ash Kicking online.
That's
A-S-H-K-I-C-K-I-N. Made with 100% natural quality ingredients, and handcrafted with your family in mind, Ash Kicking products are better than those other guys. Ash Kicking candles, incense, body butter, face moisturizer, and hair moisturizer are priced just right, and you can get yours at 10% off with coupon code TALK17. Support this 100% Black-owned business and get your home and body smelling and feeling all right.
Shop Ash Kickin' online at www.ashkickin.com.
TalkTamerRadio.com. You're listening to All in Our Family, and I'm Ash Yolanda Robinson, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Oh, listening audience, I got an expert in the studio, Marvin Smith with American Family Insurance, and he's going to tell us some of the things that we don't know about insurance. How are you today, Marvin?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing great.
That's good.
I mean, you got all these credentials next to your name. His credentials take up a whole line, y'all. You've been busy.
Absolutely.
But that means I got a real expert, you know, somebody that really knows what they're talking about. But Marvin, would you tell us, how did you get involved? involved in insurance, and what made you want to be an insurance? You got your insurance own agent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Yes. I'll be honest with you. When I was in college, actually, I was looking for a third job during my last semester of school. And yes, I did say third job.
Three jobs. My gosh.
Absolutely. I had bills, even though I was still trying to get the grades.
You had to be a member of my family. All of us usually have three or more jobs.
Absolutely. No excuses. And back then, I was looking in the Columbus Dispatch for jobs. And actually, a super regional company here had a position open. Mm-hmm. And the hours fit, the hourly wage fit. And so I began working at that company, actually in the microfish department. Uh-huh. And that at the end of my graduation, they actually had a career path program. And so between the three jobs, I had to make a decision which path that I want to go. Uh-huh. And so insurance just landed on my lap. And 23 years later, here I am.
Oh, wow. Wow. And so you've been there. I know you know what you're talking about for 23 years.
Yes.
Now, what has been your biggest challenge in those 23 years of being an insurance, having your own agency, being an agent? What has been your biggest challenge?
Well, speaking for being an agent, one of my biggest challenges, honestly, is balancing the marketing and the budget. In order for you to be successful in this business, you're going to have to get out and do a lot of networking, mm-hmm. a lot of marketing. And as mm-hmm. you can imagine, doing the right kind of marketing costs a lot of money.
Oh,
so
yeah.
when you're a small business, you've got to do a really good job at balancing your income and your funds and also balance how much marketing that it's going to take in order for you to get to where you want to be.
Okay.
The other challenge I would say is just growing my business because of all the competition. There's all kinds of independent agents as well as captive agents like myself. So as you can imagine, we live in a big city, so there's a lot of business out here. But when you're a small business and you're up against a big fish, it can be really competitive.
Oh, okay. Now, how do you manage that? What do you do to be competitive and with some of the things that you do?
Well, one of the things that I realized and recognized a long time ago is people do business with people they like. And
right.
so one of the things I do is spend a lot of time networking, mm-hmm. talking to people. There is mm-hmm. not a stranger that I will ever meet. Wherever I go, I'm networking. I heard a long time ago you should network where your feet are. And so that's what I do. And so I do a lot of networking, whether it's billboards or radio or TV advertising, but then also sending out a lot of postcards. The other thing that I pride myself in as an insurance agent is I don't sell on price. I sell on what the client actually needs, because at the end of the day, that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I'm concerned about, is how can I help protect you and make sure you have the adequate coverages for your insurance policies.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like really good, because, when you do it on a need, that's really like doing it to help your client.
Absolutely.
In the 23 years that you've been in the insurance agency, what has been some of your biggest successes?
I'll talk a little bit about when I worked on the corporate side. I was in multiple roles as an underwriter, sales management, and underwriting management. And one of the things that I think that I excelled very well in was being a salesperson, being able to go out and work with a lot of independent agents, getting them to use our company as opposed to the competition. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I feel like those 13 years of experience on the corporate side really helped me when I transitioned into being an agent with American Family, because I already understood the underwriting process. I already understood what it takes to make up the prices, all the factors that go into that. So when I'm talking to customers, it made it very easy for me to help them understand what they were paying for.
Okay. Now, did college help you? Do you have to go to college to have your own agency? And if you do, since you do have a degree and all these credentials next to your name, was it very, very helpful for you?
So my undergrad degree was in family financial management. So that goes hand in hand with insurance. There are insurance courses that you can take in college, of course, and I believe there's actually a major in insurance. But I don't know a lot of people that go to college to become an insurance agent. It's not necessary for you to go to college to become an insurance agent. Actually, I know quite a few people that started an agency almost out of high school. So they've been in the agency for 20 years, and they're barely 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not take going to college to be an insurance agent. However, if insurance is something you're interested in and you're in college, then it's not a bad idea to take that up as a major.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, I mean, you know, insurance is a big thing. I mean, what are some of the things, I mean, that we may not know about insurance? You know, that's the title of our program. What things does an average person may not know about insurance?
I think, first of all, people need to understand insurance is not expensive. Now, I do understand that it is relative, okay, based off one's income. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of different factors that go into coming up with insurance rates. Mm-hmm. So if you have your friend saying, hey, I pay $80 a month for their insurance, that doesn't mean you could call me or any other insurance company up or agent and say, hey, I have a friend paying $80. Mm-hmm. I should be able to pay $80 too because I'm the same age. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of different factors that make up insurance rates. Mm-hmm. And the average person doesn't understand what those factors are. But again, that's what you have me as an agent for, to help educate you on what makes up your rate. So first and foremost, it's not expensive.
Okay.
The second thing is you need it. I'm pretty sure if you're involved in any type of accident, whether it's at your, with your car or somebody does something to your home, you would hope that they have insurance to help protect you. Mm-hmm. So everybody needs insurance. Mm-hmm. Whether you know that or not, you do need insurance. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least is you can cover anything with insurance. I believe there are a lot of people out here that are really underinsured because they don't realize, hey, I've got a wedding ring that's valued at $10,000 that's not even scheduled on my homeowner's policy. Yeah, you need to schedule that. So there are a lot of personal items, whether they're collectibles or things passed down throughout the family, that can actually be scheduled either on your homeowner's policy or through another type of policy in a marine policy. But you don't realize the coverages you don't have until you actually have that loss.
Oh, yeah.
But you can cover pretty much anything.
Now, it's you know, speaking about covering things, is it a good idea, like if you have some things that you consider valuable, maybe some artwork or an antique that is down from, you know, generations in your family, is it a good idea to have pictures of it and take it, you know, have it in your files, in your insurance files?
Absolutely. The first thing I tell all my clients is I am not the claims expert. So when I say that, what I'm saying to you is I can't tell you that it is or it is not going to be covered, but what I can tell you is what I would suggest you do to make sure that if coverage is an issue, you've dotted all your I's and crossed your T's. So whenever I'm writing a renter's policy or even a homeowner's policy, I always tell people if you have items valued at over, say, $2,500, let's take pictures of them. Let me attach them to your file so that in the event of a theft or a fire, it's easy for us to just look at your file, see what items you actually had, and then go ahead and decide how we're going to settle that claim. So, yes, it's absolutely a great idea to take pictures. And if you have any type of appraisal for those items, definitely you want to get those to your insurance agent so that he or she can attach them to your policy.
Okay, so the insurance agent keeps those on file along with you? Well, make sure your insurance agent has those pictures?
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure, like many other agents, we're paperless today. So if you take those paper items in or everybody's using their cell phone to send text messages and pictures, then what we do is, at least at my agency, we attach that to the file electronically. Okay. So I don't keep paper files in the office, but whether I'm at home or I'm in the office, I can pull up your file and see what documents you have, and that would help settle your claim at any given point.
So that $10,000 wedding ring that Mr. Wright gave you, or Mrs. Wright gave you.
Right.
You want to get a picture of that, y'all.
Oh, you absolutely do. You absolutely do want to get a picture of that. And send that appraisal in there, too.
All right. Okay. Now, that's something that people don't know. Now, you know, there's so many different types of insurances. There's universal life. There's term. There's whole life. And I don't know what else is out there. But could you tell me when should you buy term insurance, and what is term insurance?
Okay, well, and actually what I'll do is I'll tell you the difference between all three of them. Life insurance is something that I am definitely passionate about. Life insurance is a topic that many people and families don't like to have. It's a discussion we don't like to have, but let's face it, it's a way that we've all got to go. And so we need to be prepared for when that day comes, when God decides to pick his garden, that we are not having a GoFundMe account or we're not having to have a fish fry in order to bury your loved one. So at American Family Insurance, we have term life policy and we also have whole life policies. And you also mentioned universal life. So a term life policy is just that. It's a insurance policy that will cover you for just that. 5, 10, 15, 20, or 30 years. Mm-hmm. The payments on that term policy are going to be consistent. So if you lock in today at a 30-year term policy, you're not going to have to worry about your rates fluctuating on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. It's going to stay the same for that term, mm-hmm. 5, 10, 15, mm-hmm. 20, or 30 years. Mm-hmm. At the end of that term, the policy just cancels out. You don't have any more insurance, but there's also an option for you to convert that over into whole life throughout that term, or there's mm-hmm. an opportunity for you to continue that policy at an annual renewable rate, which will mm-hmm. eventually get too expensive. Mm-hmm. So that's term life. The mm-hmm. next policy is a whole life policy. And a whole life policy, again, is just that. It's a mm-hmm. life insurance policy that will cover you for your whole life. At American Family Insurance, we will actually cover you up to 120 years old. But you would only pay on that policy. One of the payment options is to pay on it until you're 100 years old. But even still, we've got people that are living a lot longer today. Mm-hmm. So that's why, yes, we will cover you up to 120 years old. Mm-hmm. The neat thing about the whole life policy that's different mm-hmm. from the term policy is it has a cash value component, which mm-hmm. means that while you are alive, you do have access to the cash value in your whole life policy. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people can use a whole life policy for different reasons, whether it's for retirement benefits, or it's just to make sure that they have this emergency savings account, if you will, mm-hmm. put to the side as they're making their monthly payments on a whole life policy. Mm-hmm. And then a universal life policy, it's basically the same as a whole life policy. It has a cash value, mm-hmm. but it has a flexible payment schedule. As things change in our life, I may not be able to make the same $50 a month payment mm-hmm. for my life insurance policy. So with the universal policy, you do have the option to go in and change some of your payment options, or at some point maybe even stop making making a payment on your policy and wind up having a paid up whole life policy or mm-hmm. universal policy.
Mm-hmm. Is there, how much does it cost for the average, final expense? How much does it normally cost?
So I did a little bit of research yesterday, and I found out that it's probably between $10,000 and $15,000 uh-huh. to have a decent burial. So when uh-huh. we say final expenses, I'm thinking, what is the cost to have a decent burial for my loved one? So mm-hmm. when I'm talking to individuals about life insurance, if they mm-hmm. say, I just want to make sure that I have something to bury myself with, mm-hmm. then I usually encourage them to get a $15,000 whole life policy. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you can get more than that if you want. Mm-hmm. But if you want just enough to make sure that we have enough to have a decent funeral for you, then mm-hmm. I would probably say between $10,000 and $15,000. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how long? I mean, after how long does it normally take the insurance company to pay the final expense? Because I noticed that when you go to the funeral home, I heard that back in the day you could just say I got a policy and they'll start, but mm-hmm. now they want their money before they even start.
Open the door. I've heard situations where they actually would not let you have a funeral until they got their final payment.
Until they got their final payment.
So absolutely.
How long does it take for that to happen? I mean, from the insurance point.
Yep. So it can actually take anywhere from 3 days to 7 days on an average. Uh-huh. But with American Family, through August of this year, it has mm-hmm. taken us an average of 2 days to get a check to that family member. And actually, we do have an option now to where you can get your benefits via EFT. So, of course, that means you can get your payments a lot sooner than snail mail.
Yeah, so EFT, before the audience, I mean, what does EFT do? What's that acronym?
Electronic funds transfer.
Okay, electronic. So you can just get it in have it sent to you in the bank if you have the proper ID and all that.
Right? Absolutely. The sooner an individual gets the death certificate to their insurance agent and they mm-hmm. report it to the company, the sooner they'll be able to get that check out to them. So it's uh-huh. definitely realistic to believe that you're going to get your benefit from that policy before you have that funeral service, probably within the next week or so.
Oh, okay. Now, is there a possibility, can you be overinsured?
Yes, you can be overinsured. Uh-huh. A lot of times that may happen due to an inflation factor mm-hmm. that is put in your homeowner's policy. Mm-hmm. So you bought a house today and mm-hmm. we value the house at $230,000. Mm-hmm. Well, 5 years from now, that house may be valued at $250,000. So mm-hmm. there's an inflation factor that's put in homeowners' policies mm-hmm. that tries to make sure that the cost of your house does not cause you to be underinsured due to inflation. And so there could come a point to where we've got your house insured for $260,000, and really it's only $230,000 or $240,000. We can go back in and readjust those rates, and I'm speaking specifically for homeowners policies. But yes, there is an occasion where you can be overinsured. But let me say this. I'd rather be overinsured than underinsured.
Hey, I know that's right. I know that's right. The worst thing you could do is be underinsured.
Absolutely.
You know, can you be denied insurance?
Oh, you can certainly be denied for insurance.
Wow.
One insurance company does not fit all. Okay.
You
can be denied insurance because of the number of violations you have. You can be denied insurance because the vehicle that you drive doesn't fit the auto program. So maybe it's a classic vehicle needs to go on another program, or maybe it's a van that needs to be on a commercial policy. You can be denied based on all of those factors. One of the main reasons why is basically your loss history. So you definitely can be denied auto insurance and homeowners insurance. The neat thing that I like about being an American Family insurance agent is we do have an internal broker that we use. So if I can't rate it through our program and you're denied due to your violations or past loss history, I can typically write it through my broker.
Oh, okay. Now, what about your credit? What does your credit have to do with you getting insurance?
I know. This is a touchy subject here.
Things happen and your credit is not the best, and then they say you can't, you know, they go up on your policy.
Well, there has been studies have shown that there has been a direct correlation between people with bad credit and people with good credit and the number of accidents or violations that they have and that they turn in. So while credit does play a piece of the rating that goes into coming up with your rates, it is not a hard hit on your credit score. It's a soft hit. But as you can imagine, people don't quite understand why credit comes into play. But again, when studies have been done to show that there's a direct correlation between people with high credit scores and the number of claims they turn in versus people with low credit scores and the claims that they turn in. Now, I'll also say, you know, credit's not going to be a determining factor in whether or not we insure you. It's just one of the many other factors that we take into consideration when we come up with a rate for you.
What about the neighborhood you live in?
Oh, the neighborhood does that. We call that a territory factor. So when you're coming up with rates for insurance, yes, it does cost a little bit more if you live out in the suburb as opposed to the inner city. Or if you live in one territory, not the one territory, but if you want to live in one zip code as another, opposed to another, there is a territory factor that is considered there.
So,
and a lot of people don't understand that either.
So you said territory factor. So if you're in maybe 43201 versus 432 whatever, and one of them has a territory factor, what would be one of those things that would be considered about? Oh. Is it a crime or...
Well, yes, and let me back up for a second, too. I said it would be more if you live out in the suburbs as opposed to inner city. I think that's reversed. When you consider living in a congested population, there's more cars on the road, so there's more likelihood that you're going to have an accident. So the rates there would typically be a little bit higher than if you live out in the suburbs or somewhere else where there's not as much congestion. In terms of, you know, how does this affect your rate? Yes, you know, it could be an area that has a lot of crime. Again, not being the expert when it comes to underwriting and coming up with the rates for American Family, there are different factors that they take in consideration. And I believe that whether the crime rate or the number of accidents in a particular zip code, they do come into consideration. And that's why you have different territory factors.
You know, if I'm a renter, do I need to have insurance? I mean, after all, I don't own the property.
You had to mention renter's insurance, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't own the property. Why do I got to have insurance?
Well, I'll share a personal story with you because I went through this back in 1999. I was in graduate school at that time, and, you know, I lived in an apartment, and, you know, I worked at an insurance company at the time, and didn't think I needed insurance, renter's insurance, because I live in Columbus. And I actually got the call one day that my apartment building had burned down to the ground. And guess what?
Wow.
I, as an underwriter, did not have renter's insurance and lost everything I owned.
Oh,
as a matter of fact,
God.
I think there are still people waiting to kick me in the rear just because it didn't make sense for me not to have renter's insurance. So I sell more renter's insurance today than any other policy because I've been through it. It is very important for you to have renter's insurance because renter's insurance covers your personal items on the inside of your home. So if you leave your house and somebody decides to break in and steal your big screen TV or your clothes, your furniture, all of that's protected under your renter's policy. And so I like to look at it like if we take your house or your apartment that you're renting and turning it upside down, everything that falls out of it is considered your personal property. Why wouldn't you want to protect that in the event of a fire? And so it's very important for individuals to have a renter's insurance policy.
Is it very expensive?
Not at all. You can get a renter's insurance policy for as low as $15 a month. I've actually had some that are like $11 or $12 a month, but it really comes down to what other policies do you have that you can bundle to get those maximum discounts.
Okay. Now, why should people, I mean, you've already said it, but I want you to reiterate it. Why should we have insurance and how important is it? You know, to have it in your budget, to have insurance. Why should we?
Well, I don't know about your financial situation, but as far as me, I don't have $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 just sitting around in a savings account that I would not mind taking out and paying for an accident that I had. Hopefully, I'm going to be using that for retirement. And so the main reason to have insurance is because you can buy it for basically pennies on the dollar in the event of an accident. And having insurance is the responsible thing to do. So you get in an accident and there's three people involved there and they all have high medical bills. I think you would feel more comfortable knowing that you have high limits of liability on your auto policy so that you can take care of everybody involved in that accident. And it's much easier to do it that way than to have to liquidate your home or to garnish your wages for you to pay their medical bills.
Now, earlier you talked about filing a claim and you know, they look and see how many, you know, how much time, I think, no, you didn't. But if you file too many claims, can you lose your insurance and your insurance goes up if you have too many claims?
You absolutely can wind up being non-renewed for having too many claims. The job of the insurance company is to make sure that we make you whole when you file a claim. So we're going to do the responsible thing to make sure that we take care of you. But at some point, as you can imagine, the insurance company has to decide when is it time to cut their losses. We've had you insured, for an example, for 1 year, but you've already had three claims. At some point, we've got to say, there's no way we're going to get our money back here. We're going to have to non-renew this person, and maybe they're going to be getting they're going to be written in another market with another carrier that's going to charge a higher rate. And also, if it's not being non-renewed, yes, insurance companies will typically raise your rate after you submit a claim. I think the thing that I like to, I always try to express to individuals when I'm talking to them is, let's say I wrote your auto policy and you paid us $1,000 a year for that policy. Your first accident, we had to pay $2,500 to fix your car. We're now down $1,500. How are we going to recoup that money? And so that's why insurance companies wind up increasing your rates so that we can somehow, some way begin to recoup that money. But it's money shared across the landscape with everybody with insurance.
Now, I read somewhere you can be denied, they can cancel you at any time. I thought they had to wait a year. But you can be canceled at any time on your insurance?
So there is a look-see period for cancellation. Typically, if there's misrepresentation of information on the application, an insurance company could cancel you immediately. But I do know before they cancel you, I can't call you on Monday and say I'm canceling your policy effective tomorrow. You typically have to give at least a 15 to 30-day notice to give that individual time to find coverage somewhere else. But yes, an insurance company can basically cancel your policy or non-renew your policy at any time. But in most cases, I see it ends up being a non-renewal. So we'll give you to the end of your first term and just agree to not renew your contract.
All right. That, I mean, you got a lot of good information. No wonder you got all those letters after your name. It's been really informative, I tell you. But, you know, how can people, if people want to know more information about how to get in contact with you, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, I like to say I'm a 24-hour agent. Some people may not like me saying that. But what I mean by that is I work Monday through Sunday. I'm not an 8-to-5 agent. I make house calls if necessary. My office number is 614-986-3105. And then... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go on. Repeat that again.
My cell phone number is 614-625-1496. And I'm not afraid to give out my cell phone numbers because my clients do call me on weekends and after 5 o'clock. But the thing that I realized a long time ago is we need to be accessible to our agent, to our clients. And that's what I am. My clients have access to me. My agency is located on the east side of Columbus at 5340 East Main Street, Suite 202. Uh-huh. And my email address is msmith7@amfam.com, or you can visit my Marvin Smith Agency website on Facebook.
Thank you, Marvin Smith, with all those letters next to your name. We'd like to thank you. I mean, I learned a whole lot today. We'd like to thank you for being on this week's program of All in Our Family. And I'll see you next week. Love you.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.